The following is a meeting with disciples with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, given on July 11, 1996, at Rotterdam, Belgium.
So this class, I'm going to answer questions that you submitted on paper. And I wanted to comment that I appreciate the questions that you've been making in the discussion. Devotees have not been afraid to raise their hands and state some problem that they're having in devotional service. It indicates a nice increasing degree of love and trust, not just with me, but with the other devotees here. And not thinking that you'll be condemned by admitting some weakness. That's also my own approach to communicating with you. At the same time, we're trying to improve. That's why we're inquiring, to try to improve. So, as you go on inquiring this way, I get to know each devotee better. What are their concerns? And try to help. Envy is such a deep-rooted thing within the heart. I know that when I see my other god brothers and god sisters get your personal association and attention, I can't help but feel a little envious. I know this is wrong to feel like this. But is it wrong to desire or feel the need for personal attention from the guru? Reading about your relationship with Srila Prabhupada, it seems that you desired and needed that. So it's not wrong to want personal attention. But we should be patient about that, about how we get it, what we do to get it. It comes by developing a personal service relationship. And then it comes naturally. So we should have confidence that it already exists. Not be so insecure about it. As for seeing that others are getting attention, we shouldn't deny the right of other disciples to have that relationship. It doesn't compete with us or cut down from us. We also discussed, starting with the first class, the responsibility of a personal relationship, what it means to come forward for service, and how you actually should discharge it then. But about this personal attention business, the main way we serve is by serving instructions. Vani Seva, in separation. Following the order of the spiritual master. So, we feel his well-wishing influence in our life as we feel Krishna's influence, as we feel Prabhupada's influence. Not always having to be constantly affirmed by some outward show again and again and again. But we're confident of it on again and again in an ongoing way. And our particular group, as for personal attention and feeling, well, it's not enough. I want general orders. I want to know that I particularly have a relationship. What is that personal? So I'm trying to give personal attention in the way that I write. Although the book is written apparently for anybody who picks it up, a sensitive reader feels it's just for him. Some of us who used to be old book addicts used to know that you read a favorite author and you felt like you had found a friend. I'd like to read a letter one of the devotees here wrote about feeling this personal relationship by reading. Recently, I had been rereading your book, Radio Shows. One night, I was feeling restless and at a loss as to what to do with myself after a day's book distribution. I knew I wanted to do something enjoyable or nectarian before taking rest, but I couldn't settle on or think of what that could be. Several times I considered that I could read on with radio shows, but several times my mind rejected and carried on looking for alternatives. After some time, with my restlessness mounting, the little voice inside me that was saying, "Why not try radio shows?" made his presence heard, and I picked up the book and opened it at my marker. Within 10 minutes, I was berating myself for being such a fickle fool. When will I learn that you are present in your books? They're not at all mundane, something to read for amusement, leisure, or to pass the time, although all these things are actually in your books, incidentally. The basic ingredients in your books is you, and all that that entails, Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, etc. At that time, I was convinced of this and very glad of it, and went on reading in ecstasy, at least as much ecstasy as is possible for a lump like me. I think the book radio shows and its format and concept lend to this realization, also with the intention you expressed in the beginning of the book of creating an intimate, confidential mood between the broadcaster and the audience. So I tied that in with answering that question about wanting personal attention, and which I think is a good desire, but it's a silly idea to want to deny that others have personal attention. It's irrational emotion, that it's some kind of insecurity. I'll go on. You said we should be happy with being able to do a little. How can we appreciate the small amount Krishna is allowing us to do instead of lamenting that we can't do more? I find myself comparing myself to devotees and becoming disappointed in myself and my ability. So we have to accept that we are a unique person, a soul. We're not somebody else who may do more or whatever, may have better health and physical, mental health and can do more. We are who we are. So we have to be accept that in a positive way. We're Krishna. We're Krishna in the sense that we're part of Krishna. We're not nothing, as the Mayavadis say. So Krishna wants from us what we can do. And he won't judge us in a negative way. You can think of the example of Lord Rama, who accepted the offering of the spider as the same as Hanuman and the big monkeys. He wants to see the devotion. So there's an indulgence in lamentation here, as admitted. I'm lamenting that I can't do more. Besides, what is small and what is big? For Krishna, nothing is big. But in terms of somebody's offering, but he wants to see the devotion. We know Krishna likes a little tulsi leaf more than tons of gold. That sort of thing. He wants your love. I might assure the devotee who wrote this that there were a lot of questions. I didn't find them all usable, but I found her questions. Almost all of them are usable. So even if the thoughts come out of suffering, they're valuable for giving us all food for thought. This morning you mentioned honesty between guru and disciple. I find myself trying to be someone that I'm not due to fear of rejection and embarrassment. If I were to reveal myself, the real me. But I think this creates a wall to getting the help, guidance, and support I need. How do we break down this wall? Being afraid to be your actual self because you think you'll be rejected. I find, as I just said in the beginning, I find the devotees are developing more the ability to do this, reveal themselves, not as the perfect image, but say, I have this problem when I read the Krishna book, I think it's make-believe, and more privately, they're writing to me about some very basic inabilities. So I think they're developing this ability to to be open. We do it in love and trust, and not thinking that we're going to be rejected. But this real me, we shouldn't think in a mundane way or stubbornly hold on to some idea what that is. The real me is the pure soul. And first of all, yes, we have to admit what our covering is, and we won't be rejected for our present covered state. But that's not the real me either. It's like Srila Prabhupada in his accepting the beginning in America, the devotees with such very bad coverings. He was really accepting the soul, not that he was accepting, that people were doing the thing, smoking drugs and living in nudist colonies and everything. He wasn't accepting that. He was accepting them because he saw the spark beyond the covering of the body. Not leaving everything at status quo. But teaching us, educating us how to serve Krishna. Could you please explain how failure is the pillar of success? I've always been confused by this statement. So I can tell how, probably the first time I heard it was in the letter that Prabhupada wrote to me. I can tell the little story. One time the GBC members, very early, we'd only been in existence a year or so, we had a meeting and we made a number of mistakes. Only a part of us met without some of the other members, and we decided for the whole GBC. We weren't very experienced about those things. And we made some sweeping changes in the nature of the society, gave one person a lot of power, created a new post, and so on. And so it was all rather unauthorized. And so when we sent the results to Prabhupada, he was so displeased that he disbanded the GBC and sent a message to the temple presidents that they didn't have to obey the GBC. So we were just stunned. Nobody could do that nowadays. So after the meeting, I went back to where I was serving as the headmaster, as it was called, of Dallas Gurukul. And so Prabhupada wrote to me. He wrote to each person who participated in the meeting. He said, "Please explain to me why you, as an individual, took part and did the things that you did in the meeting. I want your explanation." That was nice. I was looking forward to the chance to explain the dynamics of that unfortunate meeting. And then, so he said, "You have plenty of duties there without worrying about so much big management all over. You have the Gurukul and you have your BTG editing." So, and then he said, "Anyway, don't be sorry, don't lament." I think that after I wrote my explanation, then he wrote me back and said, "Don't be." Then he saw that I was feeling very sorry. He said, "Don't feel so sorry. Failure is the pillar of success." So, I was encouraged by that phrase, and I took it to mean that we had learned a lesson the hard way, and it's a proverb. You can visualize it, I guess, as like somehow maybe a building was built poorly and it fell down, and now you build it up again, but this time right. So the mistakes you learned go into the reconstruction, so it will not be weak. And perhaps there's no way you could have learned that, and any other newcomer, not having made that mistake, could probably never learn it. Perhaps a lot of experts and wise people, whether in business or in arts or whatever, part of their wisdom is that they've made a lot of mistakes, and they know, there's no way I'm going to make that again. I know what it cost me, and I'm just not going to do it again. So that's what it means. Provided you actually learn lessons from the failure. Doesn't mean to be a perpetual failure is a successful life, but there's a benefit in these different failures that you do. It's the learning, if you're intelligent. You have to be intelligent to see what I did wrong and not do it again. Okay. If some of you are making notes, I want to be sure to cover them all. There's not that many, so everyone will feel like covered, at least the ones I have here. And then if you have any questions, otherwise if I start taking questions now, I might not be able to cover them. What do you think if in a letter, for instance, the spiritual master doesn't answer our questions? I can make some various comments here about letter writing. So the first one, why the spiritual master might not answer a question that you ask. Maybe he didn't think it was important. Or maybe he didn't even notice it. He just read the letter and somehow didn't notice it. He's also, not all-knowing in that way. So, repeat the question. Write it again. If you think it's important, as it wasn't, don't be all mystified why he didn't answer. It's because I'm too fallen and some secret message why he didn't. If you think that it was important and it wasn't answered, then answer again. Maybe this time he'll say why he's not going to answer it, or he will answer it. But on that point, that maybe sometimes devotees write a lot of questions, and I get so much mail. One difficulty is even to be able to read a letter. Some devotees have handwriting that's hard to read. So the best thing is to type, but I know some devotees that don't have access to that process. All right. Then you should letter it very clearly. If you were writing a business letter, I would hope that you wouldn't, and you really wanted, the person to understand the business company, and you didn't have a typewriter, or you're writing to a government department, they even say, write in block letters. So if you, I have so many letters to read, it's for your benefit, it's for my benefit too, for my eyes and my head, but if I get a big page with a lot of scrolls in it, that letter is more likely to have some questions unanswered. After a while, I just said, well, I got some of it. I just can't read the rest of this. And it would take me so long to decipher it. So I just give up. But if it's clear. Other points. I'm writing a PS now for the time being, but I'll, in all the letters, but I'll tell you. A lot of devotees have been saying they're not getting their mail. I write them a letter and they don't get it. I've been kind of disturbed by that, and I don't know what it is. And I don't want to be paranoid, but it may be some mail interference. I know back to Godhead magazine, they were convinced that people were interfering with the mail, like born-again Christian or something, and working in a post office. It may come from America. On the way out of America, it might happen, even if your country or local postman is friendly. So what I've asked is that the next letter that you write back to me, you write me your kami name, and I'll give those to the typist, and I won't be thinking of you by that name, but it'll be put on an envelope, and I'll just address you on the inside. We'll see if we can improve that average of, because I know it's a botheration for you, and it's a botheration for me. Sometimes devotees get so mental that they said, I wrote you, and you didn't write back. I think it's because of this. I think it's because of that. You don't like me anymore. And then I guess to say, why are you thinking that I wouldn't write you? Of course I write you. So something, it's happening too often. Another point is confidentiality. So I read all the letters. I open the letters. I have somebody recently gave me a nice letter opener. I open the letter and take it out and I read it. Nobody else reads it. And it's true that I work with a typist. Here I've been working with a typist, and I work with another typist. And I just impress on these typists as much as possible that they be confidential. So sometimes if you feel it's so confidential, You ask me to write back, and I may write a brief letter back, but it's difficult for me to answer any volume of letters, handwriting. So please rest assured, it's as confidential as I can get it in this system. And be patient, because the mail is slow. It's costly, you know. I'm traveling around the world, and not so many of my disciples come forward to learn how to type. So anyway, we have an efficient system, but so when I get a letter, I dictate it on a tape and I send it to America, and then it's typed and sent out. I have another place where the mail is sent, as you know, in Baltimore. And so when you send a letter, the delay is it sits in the mailbox. It sits and sits until about 3 weeks go by and sufficient mail is gathered, and then it's forwarded. And that forwarding costs from $60 to $100 because the only way it can be done is by courier to catch me somewhere. Otherwise, it would be another delay. So, and I don't want to be exorbitant spending money as a devotee in ISKCON. So I don't get these things forwarded more than about once every 3 weeks. So this is why things work at the pace. Some devotees have said to me, have written to me, there's been a rash of this lately, why don't you get on email? And I want you to reply to my letters by email. And some devotees send me faxes. So you know by now, if I get a fax, if you send a fax, you think you know where I am or something. The fax gets put, my instructions are, whoever gets it, put the fax in an envelope and send it to Baltimore. So your fax will be turned into an ordinary letter. Because I don't want to be on that hyped level that everyone else is on of email. I'm a non-email. It seems to promote too much exchange, emotional exchange, and I like the more thoughtful exchange. So I'm not going to answer faxes. I'm just going to answer the regular mail. Or as I say, you can send a fax if you like, but it's not going to reach me as a fax. Of course, if there's some life and death emergency, then that may be different. Some things that we think are like that aren't. I don't think that what I just said makes me, I don't think of it as less caring to communicate with you. I just don't think it's really such an improvement in the world or to get things done so much faster. We can think over what we write back and forth and write regularly. Then there's not such a long delay. You shouldn't wait more than 3 months to write. So write regularly, but don't write long letters. Some devotees, they wait for a year and then they give me like a 30-page letter. And so that's another letter that I just can't patiently give it all the due the thought that it needs. Because while I'm reading that, there's all the other letters I can read. But you know, in a two-page or two-and-a-half-page type letter, you can just really say all the things that you want to say. The columnists in Back to Godhead magazine, we've been writing for a number of years now under Jai Dorje Maharaj's new policy when he began columnists. And the policy was 4.5 pages we can type. And recently, he sent out a letter to all the columnists. From now on, your essays cannot be more than 2.5 pages. So I thought this was like a weight-reducing program for fat people or something, that he was cutting us down. But I thought, okay, good, I'll respond to this challenge. Whatever I was saying in 4.5 pages, I've got to say it in 2.5. And the idea is that actually, you can do it. You were probably being too wordy, too excessive. So we were recently given that. But if you write regularly, then there's no problem. And if you want to write longer, that's all right, too. But it should be clear. Okay. That's some different things about letters. Certainly letters are important between us. You can get some hints about my feelings about letters if you read these books. Volume 1 is out, and I told you volume 2 is coming out, my letters from Prabhupada. Next. Over the last couple of years, I've noticed I become anxious about my service. I'm losing confidence in my ability to do things, even things that used to be easy for me. Maybe this is a humble appraisal of myself, but on the other hand, it can be constraining and crippling, afraid to take risks. I try to analyze where this anxiety has come from and conclude it is because of my atheism. A lack of enthusiasm reflects my whole faith in Krishna. So on. So I saw these like two separate things here. One is, if for some reason we find we have a job service that we're not able to do, or even things we used to do, we're not able to do them, and that's making us feel insecure. I just came up with two very practical things. One is, we have to learn, we have to gain experience in what we're doing. And Prabhupada's method for this was to learn on the job, just continue to do it, and although there may be periods of you not being able to do it so well, you just have to keep doing it and gain experience. And the other practical point is, with the job, learn, be humble and go to others who know it well. There are always devotees who are doing things expertly that we may be struggling with. And so maybe a little humble to ask them all the ins and outs of how to do it, but that's a great help. Now, how this might be related to atheism, I'm not sure. But if it is, then atheism, that's dealt with by regularly hearing the science of God, science of Krishna consciousness in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. I was talking yesterday how we all have most of us have like an innate atheism from being born in the age of Kali. And whenever we go to read, we may have to overcome it, but it should be becoming superficial by now, and we're getting more and more deeper spiritual appreciation. We all heard that example that the body changes completely, all the cells, in 7 years. So we think, oh, if I've been eating prasadam for 7 years, then my body must be spiritualized. So in a similar way, our brain cells or our mental attitude is changing, and that atheism is coming out. But you have to learn the science of God. Prabhupada writes in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, whoever reads this book, not in a haphazard way, but progressively, he will overcome atheism and be even able to convince others. So here, the science of Krishna, by reading yourself and in the company of others. Satam prasangam mama virya sambido. Reading Bhagavatam in the company of Vaishnavas brings us to the highest stage. There's another devotee who said a comment that's related to this. He talks about capability in service. It's actually a comment. And he asked me to comment on his observation. He comments that, he says, actually, usually we are capable to do much more than we are doing when we work in a concentrated way. I remember the story of Prabhupada demanding that devotees print all the CCs within 2 months, and they did. I like this marathon speed of executing service. But it seems that we can't do that all the time. So I think he's made some good points there. But we can do more than we think we can. Sometimes we should set up some marathon for ourselves. And then we get rolling in momentum, and we're able to do things better. Then we can just only get at it a little bit. So certain projects that you're not getting done, you can really, if it's possible, you try to concentrate on it. I know that's true with writing. If I have a kind of a writing atmosphere, a writing retreat, I can solve problems after a while of getting into it. I can solve problems or writing blocks. I can do in an afternoon what I couldn't do in weeks because of the concentration. And so he's saying the same is true of book distribution and so on. But mostly, we may have to work in an order, in a regular way, regulated way, be steady. As he say, I think when we come to the spiritual master and offer to do service, and he approves it, then that is something. If we're sincere, we will be capable to do it. In most cases, our inability of doing something lays in our lack of sincere effort. I guess this is also indicating that these tasks we do, they're not material. My practical suggestions for the other question were perhaps they might be material to gain experience and learn from another. Although I meant, who could you learn from except from a Vaishnava? But the second comment is pointing out the spiritual nature of all this work, and capability comes to the sincere devotee. But then you may think, "Whoa, why aren't I getting capability then? Am I not sincere?" So Krishna wants to see us keep trying. Sometimes I hear ISKCON devotees are expressing their criticism of older Vaishnavas who may be outside of ISKCON. I become alert but still don't know what to do. To go away and not hear or try to stop one who is expressing criticism. Is it offensive to Prabhupada to stop this type of criticism, or will Prabhupada be pleased if it is done in a nice way and no one is being criticized as a result? I take this phrase to mean, if I correct the person in a nice way, will Prabhupada be pleased? So first, I think we have to make a distinction here between Vaishnava Parad, which is also called Ninda, offensive attitudes, which we know are the death of the Bhakti Lata. And you distinguish that from things like the position taken by the ISKCON GBC in protecting ISKCON so that Prabhupada is not minimized, because Prabhupada did give warnings that his god brothers could be harmful to our movement by their, in some cases, minimizing or outright critical attitudes toward Prabhupada. So that kind of protective resolution of GBC is different than neither does it allow on it taking that and then going further with it to blaspheme Vaishnavas, even though they may not be the same as us or the same as Prabhupada. So if you think that you hear devotees are adding their insulting and inflammatory opinions or making such statements, then it's better to go away and to avoid it. I would suggest that rather than trying to correct them, unless you're very empowered to do so. Because often people, they're not going to change their minds anyway. I try to avoid the whole thing as much as possible. And here's another one. It's got a couple more. I wonder sometimes if I'm a serious devotee, is there any chance that I can get to the final destination of bhakti, or should I forget about all this and live a mediocre profile? Sometimes I'm afraid I'm destined to never be able to be close to your mercy and to Krishna's abode. have to focus on a word choice here, which may be because this is, again, a second English is a second language here, live a mediocre profile. So I could answer the question easily if it says, should I live a humble profile? Should I be humble? Should I forget about the final destination and just do my humble service? I think that's proper, because then automatically the higher stage will be revealed to us. We'll be invited into the mysteries of Krishna consciousness by Guru and Krishna if we just humbly do our service without thinking prematurely about the highest goal. What is my rasa? And when can I be a perfect devotee? That's there in our hearts that we want to be like that, but what can we do about it except serve in the present stage, try to be attentive in our chanting, improve our sadhana. And you know the example, that story Prabhupada tells of a potter who was just starting his business and he had only one pot, but then he began to daydream of the day when he would have many pots and he would be a millionaire. And then he began to fantasize that, then I'll get married. If my wife quarrels with me, I'll kick her. And he reached out his foot and kicked his one pot. And so that was the end of his business. Must have been a nasty fellow anyway, thinking of kicking his wife. But so daydreaming, instead of seeing, you know, where am I now? I'm way down here with this one pot. But this doesn't mean that we should look at other devotees. Mediocrity, that's a concept that I certainly don't like. I don't like to think that I'm mediocre, or I don't want to live a mediocre life. That's more like accepting a laid-back attitude and not trying, like maybe some people do. They say, oh, well, don't be so serious. You know, don't be one of those devotees who's so serious to follow the guru and chant all your rounds and follow the four rules and try to become perfect. You never go to the cinema, or you never eat food that's not offered to Krishna, and you're real strict about illicit sex. Don't be so hung up on all that. You just do what you want to do. That's mediocre. So we shouldn't, if you see people like that, don't think, oh yeah, why don't I be realistic? Getting back to that other question, the real me, that's not the real me. That's the real me I used to be, which was a false me before I was a devotee. So don't be mediocre. Strive. We have to strive in a realistic way in the bhakti marg. Not like the man daydreaming about the pots. We can talk a little bit, but the last question is, how did Srila Prabhupada sing the string of prayers? I would like to sing it the way he did. So we'll save at the end, and we'll save 5 minutes to do that, and we'll sing the string of prayers. And I'll tell you a little bit first, my memories of Prabhupada and the string of prayers, and then sing it. Yes? What should be the first... Maybe I should try to think of some frustrations rather than biggest frustration. I guess biggest, I could answer more like biggest disappointment. So relate to that a little easier. The worst is the feeling of betrayal when I feel that a disciple betrays and doesn't happen very often, but when they just say, I'm not a disciple anymore and I don't accept you as a spiritual master, and that's very difficult for me, especially when there was there was a loving relationship and then somebody turns around like that. I really feel emotional I get really disturbed. Betrayal. That's the word I think of. So that's like the bottom line. Frustration. Or disappointment. I guess when they just... I guess other less extreme versions of that, drifting, some of them, they outright, you know, announce that to me or confront me with that. The confrontation is sometimes overwhelming. But rather than confront me with that, sometimes people just kind of drift away. And certainly that's disappointment, that the basic relationship more and more is not used, is atrophies, and they get less and less... I become less and less relevant to them, and I feel it, and sometimes I ask them, are you still interested in spiritual life and following? And sometimes by doing that, I dig up there was one girl, I didn't hear from her, and then she would write superficial letters. She used to be so affectionate and would travel great distances to be where I was, especially before she got initiated, in order to get initiated, which she thought was something she very much wanted, and then less and less. And then I wrote to her, and she superficial letters. And then I really said, what's going on? And then she wrote back that she had converted to Christianity. So it was like, that was a case of, she didn't want to confront me with it, but it was drifting. And so that's another version of the same. Because I feel it's a vow for life, and it's really disappointing. And there are many other varieties, I guess, of frustrations or disappointments. I hadn't thought about it so much. I guess it's kind of a negative thing. But I know you asked the question so that you cannot do that. So those are some of the things that would be frustrating for me. Another devotee asked me, what causes you stress? And there's good stress and there's bad stress. And often it has the same physical or psychological reaction on me. Here's a doctor, Swami Krishna. He knows about stress as a disease and a factor of disease. It's like a fad word in recent decades, stress, treatment of stress and so on. But I guess I sometimes get frustrated just by the burden of having disciples, but that's not something I can give up. I just said I don't. The worst thing is if they give up and don't want to have the relationship. But to have the burden of disciples itself is a kind of a burden. But it's one that I like to have. And perhaps it's a personal frustration that I wish sometimes I could be more heroic and just really get in there with each devotee and call them over and counsel them with what's wrong with them and work it out. But I just can't do it. So that's not frustration so much with their... Partly it's frustration with their behavior, that they're still working with mundane problems. And then heroically I think, oh yes, I can work out that problem. But I found that I really can't. After I work it out, then after a while they're back at the same problem again. And I've tried so hard to work with it, but what was the use? So that's kind of frustrating to see that disciples are working on with mundane problems, mundane affairs, and it would be nice if we were all, me and two, completely spiritual, and our discussion was about Krishna rather than so many mundane things, which are part of our... Everyone's trying to come up to the spiritual level. I wish I could help you do it better. And I wish you weren't in that position, that you had to be pulled up from such a low place. And I wish I weren't in such a low place. But these are things that we just have to work with, working with the reality as it is. Without being unduly disappointed. Take it as our tapasya. That's what it means to be Gosti Nandi. The person who's really disgusted with all this, he says, forget it. I'll just go apart and won't deal with anybody anymore. I'll just save myself. That's Bhajan Anandi. Prabhupada says the Gosi Anandi is more appreciated by Krishna. So in other words, all frustrations or all stresses are not things to be given up, but to be accepted. Prabhupada was frustrated. Prabhupada was disappointed. But he never gave it up. When I was his secretary once, he was dealing with finances. And then he said to me, oh, to do this, he says, causes me such a headache. He said, but if I don't do it, it will cause a greater headache. That the society will become all in financial difficulty. So there's a headache either way. Let me talk about Nisringa prayers. We chant Nisringa prayers at the end of Mangalarati. Prabhupada didn't attend Mangalarati, so we don't have a lot of recordings of him singing it. However, he's the one who did introduce it into ISKCON. There's a number of tapes from around 1969 or 70 in Los Angeles where day after day he would, some of you may have heard it, day after day he would introduce it. And he started with chanting it, sort of half chanting, half singing. In ISKCON, we put together a couple of things, one mantra and another mantra, and we sing them all together. We sing Jayadeva's verse along with another mantra. So he used to sing that the first stuff, Namaste Narasinghaya. So on those tapes in Los Angeles, he wasn't really singing a tune. Namaste Narasinghaya. And he would sing, Namaste Narasinghaya, Prahlada Lada Dayani. And so you can't call that so much a tune, although it's the beginning, it's sort of the roots of a tune. Hiranyakashipur Bhakshaha. So there's that, and then Tabakara Kamala Bare Nakam. He would sing like that. In the same, we've heard him singing Jayadeva Dasa Avatar. Now he sings a number of melodies when he sings Dasa Avatar. So they're on these bhajans, you hear a number of different melodies. So I don't have a definitive Prabhupada melody to give you. I can give you the melody that I sing, and I can't claim absolutely. I think that it's closer to the Prabhupada melody than most of the melodies that are sung in ISKCON. I think the morning melodies in most temples, I don't think Prabhupada sang those. Not that it's wrong, but I think those particular lyrical interesting melodies that are sung, they came from India. I think he sang a simpler one. The way I sing it, but I couldn't prove that for sure. I don't think, although there may be some tapes where he's just singing it aside from singing it as another verse of Das Avatar. So, if you like, it would be also nice to sing together. Well, this isn't, to answer your question, we won't be singing it. I'm not teaching you the way Prabhupada sang it. I'm just teaching you the way I sing it. And it's funny, after Mangalarti, whenever I do sing it, when I lead the singing, no one ever repeats it the way I say it. And I even wrote a haiku poem about that. Something like, no matter how many times I sing the melody, they always sing a different way, something like that. Well, not just for the sake of the tune, but I thought it would be nice to pray for, as we've been together, and we want to protect our relationship and for the protection of Prabhupada's movement and devotional service, we pray to Lord Nisringadev. Why don't we do that?
Namaste. Prahlada Lada Dayani. Hiranya Kasi Purbaksaha. Silatam Kana Kalaye. Hito Nasinha Padato Nasinho. Yato Yato Yamitato Nasinho. Pahi Nasinho Ridaye Nasinho. Nasing Hamadin Sadinam Prapade. Sabakara Kamala Bare Nakam Adbhuta Sringam Dalita Hiranyakasipu Tanubhingam Keshavadita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Sabakara Kamala Bare Nakam Adhuta Sringam Dalita Hiranyakasipu Tanu Bringam Keshavadita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Sabakara Kamala Pare Nakam Adbhuta Sringam Dalita Hiranyakasipu Tanu Bringam Keshavadita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Kamala Bare Nakam Adbhuta Sringam Dalita Hiranyakasipu Tanu Bringam Keshavadita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Abakara Kamala Bare Nakam Adbhuta Sringam Dalita Hiranyakasipu Tanubhringam Keshavadita Narahari Rupa Jaya.